Hello and welcome. My name is Peter Sumpton, marketing consultant and Lego master of marketing. And you're listening to the Marketing Study Lab podcast live. Well, this bit isn't live, but the rest of it is. You'll hear a bit about that later. I mean, now. Well, let's crack on. These episodes are taken from my live show, Marketing And, where we look at the relationship between marketing and a specific topic, subject, or specialism. Sometimes there'll be guests, other times it'll just be me. So let's get cracking.
And we're back live on a Friday. And my guest, yet again, I've got another guest because no one wants to be alone on a Friday evening, do they? And what better guest to have on a Friday than John Asperian, the legend that is. So, John, I'm not going to do your intro. I'm sick of introducing you, to be fair. You've been on my podcast twice. I always talk about you on multiple podcasts, so I'm going to let you do your own intro this time.
You've had enough of me, and this is my last time on the show. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, I'm John Asperian. I'm a technical copywriter by trade. Also call myself a LinkedIn nerd because I've been researching this platform for bloody forever. So I help people with their LinkedIn profiles. I write content for their websites and try to be an all-round nice guy where I can. but I'm not going to be a nice guy today. I think we're going to have a bit of a moan. We're going to have a bit of a moan today about social media.
And why not? I think, as always, just to introduce what we're doing here today. So we're live on Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube. If you have any comments, just please post them below as we go along. But the reason that I do these lives on a Friday is to have a bit of a general chat with somebody about marketing and then whatever that might be. So today it's social media bad practice, but let's just call it a social media moan about things that we do or other people do, should I say, not us, obviously, because we're squeaky clean, that other people do that are just either bad practice, don't work, shouldn't be done, you wouldn't do that in real life, so why are you doing it on a social platform? Those types of things. But before we start, John, I've got a little quiz for you. It's one quick question. I want you to tell me who said this, okay? Don't ever try to sell me on anything. Give me all the information and I'll make my own decisions.
I believe that was Mr. Kardashian, wasn't it? Kanye West put that in a tweet, and it was almost 10 years ago, I think he said it, but it was that's a brilliant kind of summation of what content marketing is all about. Instead of trying to sell to people, you should try to educate them. That's the route to building trust. And I think a lot of people would do well to take his advice on that one, to be honest, because there's so many salesy crappy practices that we see and I just wonder why they persist, really. Like, I wonder, you know, because I receive them in my LinkedIn inbox and you think, why are you selling to me? I mean, who is this working for? You go, that's brilliant. Thanks. I mean, your success rate must be so low. So I just think that salesy approach just isn't for me. And I can't imagine that it works for anyone, to be honest.
Mm. I mean, you'd feel that there's that much around that it works for some people, but I don't know. I'd be a bit amazed if to find somebody. I'm yet to find somebody, and if they're listening, please speak up and say, do it all the time. And it really works because we automate it to 50,000 people and we get two people say yeah.
Well, this is the thing, though. See, back in the day, if it was, all right, you're going to be using an automation tool to spam loads of people through email, then you can, even though I didn't agree with that either, you can kind of at least see that the finances make sense because it's not costing you any more to send a message to 500,000 people than it is to 5,000 people or you know, many fewer. So there, I can kind of see why automation would work. But on social media, unless you're going to do it through the automated route, then I don't see any reason why you would try that, because it would take you so much effort to get a single lead out of that approach. But maybe people are just automating, and that's that's another one of the bad practices is just the process of doing what I would call front of house automation is a bad thing. You know, So I mean, I talk about this in content DNA. It's back of house automation is all right. You know, the stuff that you can't see that just makes the business's processes smoother, but that isn't detectable at the front end. That's cool and that's smart. Mm-hmm. But front of house, you know, where you can see, they'll start a message with, "Hey there." Okay, that's automated.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, just something that obviously looks like it's boilerplate text. I just can't imagine that works on the modern social media user. It definitely doesn't work on me. And I know a lot of people who've been put off, I mean, LinkedIn specifically, but I'm sure this happens everywhere, because they'll say it's just full of sales pitches.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's actually, you know, it's damaging, because the people who might actually have something interesting to say are thinking, stuff this for a game of soldiers. I'm not going to hang around where someone's just going to be bombing my inbox with all sorts of rubbish.
I'd love to know if, even down to the point of view of, we've got this new product out now as a post, I'd love to know if that's ever worked for anybody. And I suppose it must in some industries, absolutely. But in general on LinkedIn, I'd be amazed if that is a good tactic to utilize in anything on LinkedIn. It just seems a bit crazy to me.
Yeah. I think we need to earn the right
mm-hmm.
to promote ourselves. And so, you know, I've heard some marketers say, well, maybe 1 in 5 of your posts could be promotional. Maybe 1 in 10 of your posts could be promotional. Maybe 1 in 20 of your posts. It depends on who you listen to. But yeah. I think you've got to make sure that you do something that educates and informs and entertains to earn the right to pitch to people.
Yeah, and there's a way of doing that.
Yeah.
And the thing that I like about the way you go about what you do from your website to social, and I suppose we'll cover it in a little while in terms of being the same everywhere, yeah. is that you don't sell, you educate, but you do it from the point of view of very much openness and transparency. There's not a lot to hide in terms of what you offer from a business perspective.
No.
And what you tell people, you know, you're upfront with your rates, you're upfront, you push and promote the industry and other people in it. And it's like, it's just all for the good, really. And why wouldn't that be a thing?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people have got that kind of scared competition mindset.
Mm-hmm. Actually, yep.
You know, the big realization that most people don't have is that your biggest competitor isn't the guy down the road who does the same thing as you. The biggest competitor is complete inaction, isn't it? Your brain is tuned to try and conserve energy, not have to make hard decisions. And the easiest decision for it to make is to do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Your conscious brain is the easiest thing is to do nothing. So that's the competitor you're dealing with. So if you're battling that foe, you've got to make it as simple and frictionless and trustworthy to deal with someone as possible, so that you can move them to that point where they actually do want to do something. And you're not going to do that by hiding stuff. You know, I think that those days are over now. You know, you can't keep secrets on the internet. It doesn't work like that. So I think, you know, quite apart from the fact that I think it's just the ethical thing is just to tell people the truth as much as possible. I just think it's the smart business thing to do. I mean, when it comes to making a decision, who are you going to trust? The person who lays out all of the facts and even some of the flaws, or someone who just says, you know, shiny, shiny, everything is brilliant. Let's get into a consultation. We'll talk about prices later. Well, no, that's not going to work, is it? I think you've got to be more and more transparent, and we'll eventually reach a point where the only successful businesses are the ones who actually do share everything up front.
Yeah.
And then people can make an informed choice. And there'll be less hoodwinking, hopefully, in the future.
The one thing I've noticed over my career, I suppose we're going off a bit of a tangent, and I'll bring it back in a moment. But the one thing that I've noticed over my career is that if you do that standard, go to an event, which those event things still exist somewhere in the world. If you go to an event and you say, "How's business?" and the answer is pretty good, that means it's terrible. It's like, why wouldn't you just say, "Well, actually, we're struggling at the moment, to be fair. You know, we're looking for new business. So if you know anybody that can benefit from what we've got to offer, you know, let's connect." I don't understand why there wouldn't be that honesty. I've never got that.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
So, because you can't have your standard background, I feel like I should pin this to the wall or something.
You need to check.
I don't know.
Mate. You're both wearing blue. This can't be right. This is not right. And this whole thing is blue in front of me now.
Well, yeah, that is very true. It's a bit embarrassing. So, for people that don't know, is that, well, I'm currently sat in an office in the centre of the Champions of England, so in Liverpool City Centre, which is cool. They are the Champions of England, as we like to tell people. And this isn't a brag, far from it, but fabulous book. I was talking about this book. When was I talking about it? I'm sure it was yesterday. Yes, it was yesterday with both our friends, Nicole Osborne. And I can just, nice little thing there. And at the bottom, six times. There you go. Love it. And what I was saying, you are, sorry?
I hope that's out of date soon.
Same here. But the thing that I was saying is that I don't read many books, but I've read this book because it was just dead easy to read. It's not too long. It's full of valuable information. And this isn't me blowing smoke up your ass. This is me being perfectly honest. But the thing that I intended to do when life gets in the way is go back through it and start to mark up the elements that I need to have in my business. And I haven't done that. In fact, I've got two pages in my diary of notes from it, and that is it. But that is on my to-do list. So I just wanted to highlight the fact that anyone that's listening, check out Content DNA, because it's a really good read. It's simple to read and understand what you need to do, and it's just about applying it. And like you said, it's my brain that's stopping me from doing that more than anything, because time is never an excuse.
Yeah, I think I mean, in your case, you've got the whole Lego thing going on, and it is a very, very memorable kind of hook that you've got there. And, you know, I mean, most people who've seen me on LinkedIn know that, you know, I'm wearing him now. I've got my cartoon Bitmoji on. And it's almost like a bit of a cornerstone, isn't it? It's like you want to occupy that space in people's mind that says, oh, yeah, it's that guy who does whatever. And they've got a really quick and easy way of remembering them. So it's that Lego marketer, or it's that cartoony LinkedIn guy. I mean, I'm not saying that everyone needs an avatar in that same way, but I think everyone needs a hook, definitely, because otherwise you're swimming in the sea of sameness, aren't you? But
And if you can link that to your personality or who you actually are, which I think we both do that, then you're onto a positive thing, because regardless of how people say it, you know, like, oh, that's the Lego person, or they, you know, they've got that cartoon character that is about them and linked to them. It's that link, it's that association, and it makes it memorable because they've actually remembered it. They might not remember the exact phrase or what it is, but they've remembered it because it stands out, like you say.
Yeah, that's the thing. And it's what a lot of people don't do, and they end up kind of being, actually, they end up doing what I used to do before, you know, short of a few years ago, where I was just too scared to be myself. And so you end up being really generic in what you do. You know, you just end up really being, even if you're not a boring person, you come across as being really boring, and you're forgettable. And what's the point? What's the point of being on social media if you're not going to be yourself? And like, you know, I had this discussion the other day, and just seeing someone's writing and thinking, that's not right. That's not them. You know, it's not. They're not like that. Why are they writing like that? They're just scared. It's you know, I mean, there are many worse practices on social media. But honestly, if you're not yourself, then you're going to attract the wrong people, or you're not going to attract anyone. In which case, what's the point in any of it? You know, you want people to, when they actually get into a phone call or a Zoom call or meeting you in person, if that's ever going to be possible again, you want them to go, oh, yeah, you know, you're exactly the way you were in your LinkedIn post or on your website or whatever. You don't want to give people that shock to the system, like, oh, you're actually really funny.
And yeah, wasn't expecting that.
You know, or worse, you know, you've paid someone to make you look really polished and funny and whatever online, and actually you're kind of dull as ditch water. I don't know, but it's just
I hate
seeing those kind of disconnects, you know, where it doesn't all line up. I just, that does my head in, to be honest. I want people to as open and honest and real as they can. And if you are, then I think, you know, everyone has something interesting to say, and you can get on quite well with social media. That's what I found. Mm-hmm. The last few years, I just relaxed. I've just been myself, and hey, it's working out.
Yeah, absolutely, which is brilliant to hear. One thing just leading on from there, so we both come from a corporate background, or we have worked in those industries before. How, and I think you alluded to it just then, but how long did it take for you to wash that out of your system?
Probably, I'd say about 5 or 6 years before I could really relax into my voice. It took a while, you know. I mean, yeah. I didn't even get on social media when I set up my own business. I did set up a website pretty soon, but I didn't get onto social media straight away. So I was kind of a bit of a late adopter.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, you're so used to kind of, you've got to wear a shirt and tie mindset that it takes you a while to let go of that and think, actually, does anyone care? Like, wouldn't they just rather have a real conversation with a real person? It did take me a while. So it's all very well and good me telling people, hey, you need to just relax and be yourself, people. I didn't do it. It took me ages. So I can't lecture anyone on this. I'm just saying it works when you do. So try to find a way to do it quicker than 5 or 6 years, because it will really benefit you if you can.
But it can be really hard. You know, I sometimes start writing something and then I look back at a sentence and think, why have you written that? That's just not, that's not even how you'd even speak, let alone write. Like, what are you doing? And then I'll delete and rewrite it, because it takes a while to wash out, I think.
Yeah,
6 years is a long time.
Yeah, it's one of the things I say in the book, actually. It's just the best thing you can do is read your own writing out loud before you commit it to the digital page. And if it doesn't sound like you, you better edit it, because someone's going to see the gaps. You know, someone's going to you're not saying something right there. So yeah, it's a really important tip to get your content right, is to read it out loud. Not enough.
So, I agree, and I'll put myself in that bracket. I'm more of a write it and go kind of bloke, and I know I need to work on that, because sometimes like typos are my nemesis, but I'm not the best copywriter in the world, to be fair. So, I try. But what I'd like to do is focus on, and I know we've been talking around these topics, but some of those things that really get our goat or grind our gears, or bad practices on social, and things that people can, if anyone's watching or listening, can look to avoid, because it's just like, no, just don't. You might have seen it work and someone's ended up with 50,000 followers and they get engagement every single time they post, but are they really, like, is that just all fluff and rubbish, which it probably is? But I suppose the first one that interests me is automation.
Yeah.
So let's just have a quick chat about automation on social platforms.
Well, I think, and again, this is something I used to do. So, hey, you know, I'm a reformed automator, if you like. back in sort of 2016, I thought that social media was hopping onto a scheduling tool for 20 minutes on a Sunday evening, lining up a load of blog posts and other interesting stuff that I've come across during the week, and setting it to schedule throughout the following week, and then getting on with something else. And that was social media. And a lot of people still do that, or they hire a social media manager who does that for them. That's not social media at all. That's just drip broadcasting, isn't it? It's not social media. You're just putting stuff out. It gets zero likes and comments, and everyone ignores it. What's the point? Yeah. Actually, social media isn't about that kind of automation. When I came to realize that wasn't the right way of doing things, when I actually thought maybe the best way of doing it is actually to be social, actually to engage in conversation, and, you know, engage on other people's posts, respond to people who are looking at my posts, try and have conversations with them in public and in private through direct messages. You can't automate any of that.
Mm-hmm.
You could, I suppose you could pay someone to do that bit for you, But that's just taking the task off your desk and giving it to someone else who has to become a mimic for you. Well, they're probably not going to be able to do that either very well.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly just automating the broadcasting bit on its own isn't going to work. If you automate the broadcasting and also are around to engage with people and go and seek out other content that you can comment on or, you know, collaborate with and have private conversations, if you're around to do those bits, then brilliant. But without those bits, your social media ain't very social and you're not going to get really any results from it. I can't think of anyone that I know who does do just the broadcast and gets results, apart from the mega influencers. So if you're someone who's got a million followers, you can do that, because enough of your followers have built up enough loyalty with you that if you just announce some product or whatever, they'll go and buy it. And it's not a problem. You can just broadcast. You don't need to reply to anyone. It'll work. But you know, that's a vanishingly small proportion of the social media user base. Most people can't get away with that.
Yeah. I think you've almost got certain levels as well. So you've got that bottom tier where you need that interaction, you need that engagement, you need to be on the platform. It needs to be you. You need to start building and developing and lo and behold, being social. Imagine that. But like you said, then there's almost that crossover to, well, how big are you actually getting? And how, because if we're taking that from the point of view of it's a social platform, we need to be social. Well, if you've grown that following to X amount, then you can't reply to everybody and you can't be everywhere all the time. Then how big are you going? But you're almost like a company rather than a person then.
And then
I think you're in a different realm of what people want to hear from you and how you communicate with them anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I've actually wrestled with that problem myself. Mm. Haven't really solved it yet, but I'm thinking, I know that if my and apologies for just focusing on LinkedIn, but that really is my strong suit. But I know that if I keep growing my LinkedIn following at the same rate that I am now, then it means that in a year's time I'll have about 60,000 followers, which is quite a lot, right? And it wouldn't be that long from there to go to maybe 100,000, because of course that kind of snowball effect, isn't there? Because once people can see someone with a lot of followers, they go, well, I'll follow them as well. It actually becomes a lot easier to grow the massive numbers once you get to quite big numbers. Whereas kind of going from 1,000 to 2,000 might be a real slog, but going from 50,000 to 60,000 actually is probably a walk in the park, right? So there comes a point where if you do grow to become really, really big, then the only way to manage it would then to get help, some kind of help. But you have to make sure that your business can sustain it, you know. So if you're growing your following, really that means that you should be getting more and higher quality business, you know, either selling more product or selling more valuable services so that you can actually support a growing following. Because otherwise, if your income and your available time stays the same, then yes, you're absolutely right. You will hit a point where you're going to go, I'm trying to do all of this myself, but I actually can't service any more people. Then you know, you'll probably hit some kind of ceiling. But I think the thing that's given me comfort is, I was looking back at something that Kevin Kelly wrote a while ago about this idea of 1,000 true fans. You know, you need to get the really hardcore people who are in your audience. They'll do your marketing for you. They'll do your for you. If you've got more followers than actually you need, that's not, you know, it's not really a problem. You need to service the real hardcore fans who are going to take your message out to the masses.
Yeah.
And for most businesses, unless you're a kind of stack 'em high, sell 'em low kind of business, you don't need thousands and thousands and thousands of people to turn into customers. You know, you might need 50 customers.
Mm-hmm.
You might need 10 customers. So does it matter? Maybe it doesn't matter to think, oh, I've got to keep growing, Maybe you don't.
Yeah. And it's certainly something that I give a lot of consideration to, and certainly something that I wrestle with quite a lot. I see things like, and we'll come on to it in a minute because it'll be a really interesting chat, I think, but I see things like pods, and let me explain where I'm going here, but I see things like pods, and I see things like automation, and I see things like that are clearly not them posting it. And I know some people on LinkedIn that don't do their posting. They do some engagement with their people, but they don't do their posting. And some part of me thinks, yeah, I get that to a certain extent because it grows the business. It gets you more, it gets you to people, sorry, let me rephrase that. It gets more people viewing your content, whether they're the right people, that's debatable, but then you're more exposed, more people see you because, like you were saying, it kind of snowballs. And then once you're there, then people could start to resonate. But then there's that other side that's like, well, that's just completely unethical. It's like, why would you do these bad practices? What's wrong with building slow and going slow? Because you're one person at the end of the day. And you might build a team around you. But so it's one thing that really, really I wrestle with all the time. And it goes back to what you were saying. It's don't focus on the number, because if you ever listen to Seth Godin at all, he always mentions the Grateful Dead. And I don't think they either had one number one hit or they had a one top 10 hit. And they were absolutely huge because they just focused on that core fans, and those core fans went to see them live like 50, 100 times.
Yeah, that's right. Which is a bit mad. Yeah, I think is it David Meerman Scott's got a book about the marketing secrets of the Grateful Dead, something like that.
Oh, okay, right, okay, that's cool.
And yeah, they obviously knew their fans really well and profited from it. So yeah,
mm-hmm.
Cool. But pods. I mean, just wow. I think they are totally unethical, and I call in my I've got a course called How Not to Be a LinkedIn Loser, and in there I just say that the pods are really like an unholy alliance between people who are often in different businesses, and that that is a real problem, I think, because you imagine that you're a marketer, and imagine that you're in a pod. So it's a for those who haven't been introduced to pods, they're sometimes formal, but usually a loose agreement between a group of people that when one person posts something, everyone else in that group will go and like and comment and share in order that the post will be seen by more people. But, you know, if you're a marketer and you're in a pod with a logo designer and a landscape gardener and a swimming pool technician, right? And then, you know, you're going to be boosting their content by commenting on it. Well, first of all, that's going to take you some time to go and engage. But second of all, and possibly more importantly, you're going to be referring some of that content into the feeds of the people who follow you. Mm-hmm. So the people who follow you say, right, pizza marketer, I need some marketing knowledge. Brilliant. I'm going to follow Pete, or I'm going to connect with Pete, and therefore I'm following him. Great, I'm going to get some marketing insights. And then they see, say, you know, Pete commented on so-and-so swimming repair post. I'm thinking, what? What's that about? And then Pete commented on so-and-so logo design thing. Well, hang on, I'm here to learn about marketing study or whatever. That's not relevant to me.
Mm.
And it's this idea of the extended content footprint, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your content footprint is the stuff that you create directly. And obviously, you're in full control of that. What you're not quite in full control of is the fuzzy outline of it, the extended content footprint, which is all of the stuff that you interact with has a chance of being referred into the feeds of the people who follow you. And if that's not super relevant to them, they might unfollow you. And if they do unfollow you, you're probably never going to get them back. And that, then you're essentially dead to them. So
mm-hmm.
being in a pod means that you increase the risk of that kind of thing happening.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, LinkedIn being the way it is, it will get more intelligent over time. And if it sees the same five people or however many people commenting on something within a few minutes of that thing going live, it might go, maybe they were primed to do that. Maybe. Maybe they didn't just see that naturally and decided to comment on it. In which case, you know, LinkedIn are very, very happy to close you down if they think that you're breaking the rules. They're pretty hot on their user agreement. So it's just a generally bad thing to do all round. Just that visibility for visibility's sake, unless you know something more about, you know, the people who are likely to see the content, it's probably not going to be very valuable to you. And I think it's just a sign of bad practice. It's trying to cheat the system, trying to get quick, early engagement. And I don't think it really works. And the people who tend to be in the pods aren't posting the quality material. You know, you can, it's just not very good stuff, but it's been boosted by others, and an experienced user can see through that. And I don't think it's going to serve them in the long run.
So I've just been talking about pods on like another group, and it's a group of podcasters, two completely different things, by the way. Let's just get that right. Podcasters and pods, and a group of podcasters. And we've got this group, and we share when we post things, but we don't say like, push my content. If it's relevant, then we'll comment. If it's not, then it's like, yeah, that's fine. I'm just going to leave that. But we, you know, it's not a pod. It's a group of people, and we come together and we do like group talks and stuff like that. And I think that's absolutely fine. It's this bad practice of, and to the worst extent, you pay to be in here, and we will boost your content to high heaven. I mean, that's just.
Yeah, and there are some businesses based on that. I don't know how they're still operating, to be honest, because I can't really shut down. But, you know, if you do get into any kind of arrangement like that, just watch out. Because if someone, look, right, if you're in a pod and someone posts something that you disagree with, what are you going to do? You know, if someone posts, vote Trump, and you go, oh, God, hang on, well, I've just said that I'm going to support all your stuff and like and share and comment on it. Am I going to call you out publicly? Probably not. Am I going to have to support something I don't believe in? Oh dear. What do I do? How on earth do you kind of work that out? So you've got to make sure that you stay on the same page and be friendly about everything that you do. And if someone's posting complete tosh, you've got to support it anyway. I just think it's bad practice. So absolutely. What you just said, if you've got like-minded people all working to the same goal, you know, in the same industry, and there's no mandate that says you must share this. You know, if you want to, you can. If you don't want to, that's fine as well. Then you know, that's just a group of friends.
That's pretty much how it feels. It's an amazing thing.
And you know, there's no problem with that. But trying to formalize it, and certainly paying for it.
I mean, that goes back to bad practices such as, we'll get you number one in Google. Oh, yeah. But really? Yeah. Just talk me through that. Go on. Just talk me through that. How are you going to do that?
Lots of dodgy tricks with search engine optimization, I guess. But I guess that links back to people being easy to dupe. It's sad, isn't it? That
people
That kind of thing could happen, but yeah, it does.
I was listening to a podcast once, and I can't remember who it was that was on there. I'm sure it was Eyes podcast or vlog or workshop or whatever she wants to call it, because she's an amazing person. The person said, they said, Google used to be stupid. It's not anymore. And it's like, yeah, you've got a point, because there used to be some dark arts that worked to a certain extent. But Google's a little more sophisticated than that nowadays. And if anybody thinks that, or anybody tells you that they can get you number one for something, it's unless you're in that field, unless you've got that credibility, it's a fundamental lie. Plus, that doesn't take into consideration anything else, other people's search, what they've been searching, their location, all that kind of stuff. It's just a nonsense.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, I can't remember the exact way he phrased it, but Andy Crestodina, in his writing, talks about, you know, Google is a massive, massive business, and it hires the best people and could easily have 10,000, 100,000, let's say, of the world's best computer scientists working on their product. Do you think that you and your website can fool those guys? Because if you do, you're in the wrong game, they're going to beat you, aren't they? They're going to suss you out. So if you want to match yourself against all those nerds in those lab coats who are working on this every day to serve up the best possible results, you're on a loser. Don't bother. Just create content that actual humans would want to read and comment on and share, and that way Google will learn that you've got something of value.
Absolutely. So I want to finish on a positive. Let's try and do that for a Friday evening. So what tactics or what's working well on LinkedIn right now? What could people deploy? And I'm not talking about the, you know, oh, we'll join a pod and automate all your content. Not that kind of tactic. What I'm talking about is, well, video seems to be working quite well because, or just standard copy, LinkedIn stories, that seems to be getting a push at the moment. You know, what's working well?
Well, I mean, every time LinkedIn produce a new feature, that tends to get a boost. So it hasn't been that long since LinkedIn polls have been out. So at the start, when someone would post a LinkedIn poll, it would get a lot of visibility because it's a new feature. The latest new thing on the block is LinkedIn stories. So that I only I've had that for only a week in the UK, but that has got high visibility in the LinkedIn mobile app and is a really good way of getting engagement, actually, because I've only done a couple of stories so far, but I've had a lot of direct messages off the back of mine.
Cool.
And what that means is that you get into more conversations, and that's actually where all of the business happens on is through public comments and private conversations. So the more things that you can do to spark those conversations, the more chance you've got of getting better success from LinkedIn. So do invest in you know, creating some stories if you haven't already tried them. All of my stats show that text-only posts still work the best on LinkedIn versus image posts, which, you know, that flies in the face of everything else that people on the other social platforms. So text-only posts work really well. Document posts work really well because there's been a change in the LinkedIn algorithm a few months ago, which means that it now benefits, you know, it rewards people for high dwell time on a post. So in other words, the amount of time that someone spends looking at a post, correlates to some extent with the success of that post. So if you create a video, then people have to watch that for a while if they're going to actually consume it in any meaningful way. So that's good for dwell time. And if you create a document post, so that's something like a slide, you know, a PDF carousel slideshow thing, that's something that takes people a while to click through, but that also means LinkedIn will go, oh, they're spending some time on this, it's probably good, let's show it to lots of people. So videos and document posts get really good numbers, and that's where it's worth investing a little bit of time in creating that kind of content. And also there's now a featured section for LinkedIn profiles. So top of your profile, you can feature your best piece of content. So whatever it is that you're promoting, it's a good idea to put that up in the top of the featured section so that people browsing your profile can learn a bit more about you. And as much as possible, leave your salesy stuff for your profile and leave your explanatory, helpful, you know, personality stuff for your content. So, you know, content tells, profile sells. Think of it like that. Yeah. Put your, you know, your more sales focused messages in your profile for the people who are going to do the due diligence on you, I would say.
One thing I hadn't thought of there, and you raised it, and it's a bit of a genius ploy, and it makes more sense why LinkedIn have got stories on there, is because you really need to start that communication one to one on an individual basis to build that relationship. And you know, it's very rare that you would have that conversation on a post in an open platform that says, oh yeah, I want to buy from you, let's chat. But through a DM, and that's what LinkedIn Stories does, it diverts everyone into your DM, which is a genius move. Never thought of it like that.
And it's worked for me. You know, on one of my stories, someone's who's been connected with me for a while said, you know, they were thinking about maybe they should hire me to create some LinkedIn content for them, and maybe they wouldn't have got in touch if I'd just done a normal post. So it definitely can work. You need to have got over that earlier mindset thing that we talked about being yourself, because you absolutely can't be, you shouldn't be a fake person if you're going to be doing stories, because that's really quite raw and real.
Yeah.
Just everyday stuff, isn't it? So you need to kind of be comfortable with that. But also remember that people aren't expecting polished perfection, especially in a story format. And it goes after 24 hours anyway. So you're not going to have it's not going to be something that's going to embarrass you, 6 years down the line. It'll be gone. So just share a bit of that, a bit of your personal story, a bit of what's going on in your day, the behind the scenes stuff. That can be really useful in getting closer to your audience, I think.
And I think we'll wrap it up here. But one thing you just said then, I think is just absolutely bang on. You just said that person might not have got in touch if I hadn't have done that. Mm. And that is just an absolute 100% reason why you should be creating valuable, interesting content for the people you want to attract. Because there's a lot of lurkers, and rightly so, because we all consume content and we don't comment, like, or share or whatever. And you don't know who's watching, and you don't know how helpful you're potentially being to that one person. And that's what I always think. I always think, okay, if I post this or I have this live with you, John, or whoever, as long as I'm helping that one person, as long as one person gets a little bit of value or thinks, that's a good idea, I'm happy with that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know that Wayne Gretzky quote that, I miss 100% of the shots I don't take.
Yeah.
If you don't put yourself out there and create something, the people who get remembered are the people who create stuff. If you don't create anything, you won't get remembered. There's nothing to remember, is there?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
yeah, do it if you can, because it will give you a chance of being relevant.
So, John, I'm not going to say where can people find you, because I think it's clear and obvious LinkedIn. And because you haven't got your background, I'm just going to float that in the background for a little bit. But yeah, get Content DNA. It is. And I wouldn't mention it if I didn't think this, but it is a really good read, just for various reasons. And I'm just trying to very quickly think of them and find them. But on page 98, somebody wrote something, or you wrote something that somebody once said about something. Oh, yeah, it's when I sent you that final program. And it was a really good tactic. I could have sent you 20 quid, as you rightly pointed out. And then you direct messaged me and said, where's my 20 quid? but no, it is a really good read. So, yeah, get it. Or, in fact, if anyone's still listening, because I'll put this into a podcast, and if anyone's listening to the end, message me that you enjoyed this, and I will actually send you a copy of it.
Oh,
so there you go. And I'll buy it through the appropriate channels. I won't even fob it and say, John, can I get a free one? Because somebody's asked for it. Brilliant. John Aspirin, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so, so much for joining me.
You're welcome, Pete. Thanks for having me. Cheers.
Thank you so, so much for listening and staying with me till the end. Not many people do on podcasts. If you want to chat a bit more marketing, feel free to hit me up on LinkedIn. Email me at petersumpton@marketingstudylab.co.uk. Or join our Facebook group, Growing and Thriving. Just search for Marketing Study Lab on Facebook. Happy marketing.